It is July 10th, and this is Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about World Trade Center Atlanta by going to their website at WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and we are proud here at Business Radio X to be partnered with Central Atlanta Progress, and they will be on with us as usual in the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, today I'm joined by Monica Prothrow and Anthony Knight from Atlanta's Cyclorama, as well as Daryl Rogers, the president of Emerald Data Networks. It's great to have them all in studio today, and we're going to jump into a conversation that's already been started. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty getting started, so you missed the headlines. We discussed some of the headlines on live on air, but for the podcast edition of Good Morning Atlanta, we're going to jump straight into some conversation with Anthony and Monica about what's happening at Cyclorama. Here we go.
And something that we'll be fortunate to be able to present this summer is the contribution of Jews in the war. I think we don't think about religious factions of society being involved in the war, but they really were. And so Jews were living in the South, obviously, and certainly had a role to play. In the fall, we'll actually be doing a program that talks about Native Americans and their role, not only in the war, but having
in that time period
enslaved African Americans. So this war, at least for me over the last couple of years, what I've been able to learn, it just represents so much of what still happens in this country today. Some of the conversations that we still have, some of the political and economic divides that still exist, some of the racial and religious divides that exist. This is an opportunity for us to use the Civil War as a means by which we can really help people understand not only the differences and the challenges that individuals or that people faced during that time, but kind of how those have evolved over the now 150 years and where we have landed today.
It's really interesting because, not to bring everything back to my personal reading, but again, looking at this...
But it is all about you. You said that earlier.
Isn't that what we established? Yeah. You know, talking about, again, about Drive, this book, and he talks about motivation. And one of the things that he talks about is autonomy as a motivator, and that people want to be autonomous. They want to be, you know, quote unquote, free. And that as a civilization, we have constantly moved towards that. Whenever any group of people is enslaved or limited in any way, whether it be women, African Americans, Jews, whomever, they've aimed to be free, to be autonomous, to be making their own decisions, you know, about their lives in general. And that remains true. And right now, you know, there are certainly places in the world where people are still in that struggle. And then there are smaller struggles like that that we face every day internally at a corporation. You know, we're not necessarily free to make our own decisions, you know, when you work for a big company or when you're in school or whatever. And so it is just kind of interesting to see the Civil War is sort of a huge illustration, obviously, of that struggle for autonomy. In a lot of ways. I mean, the South was struggling to be autonomous to some extent. They didn't like what the North wanted, right? And, you know, African Americans were struggling to be free because obviously nobody wants to be a slave. So, and on it goes. But it's really interesting because it's such a, you know, condensed look at that sort of human nature, human motivation, and how hard we'll sort of struggle for what we need to survive. And autonomy is one of those things, you know, it's kind of interesting. One of my kind of big questions in life, hot buttons, if you will, is how do we keep younger people engaged in some of these attractions, some of these more cultural things that we have in the city? I think there's a gap in my mind, and I Karen's probably been around when I've talked about this before, but kids go because school field trips bring them, you know, parents who are thinking that way bring them. I mean, I think Daryl said before we went on the air that he brought his kids,
yes,
right, to Cyclorama. And so there's the kids come, and then the older people come, the white hairs, we'll call them, because we're going to pretend that we're all really young in this room.
Hey, be careful.
Listen, me and Claire all, just saying. But, you know, there's a gap, I think, whether it starts in your 20s or you know, mid-20s, 30s, and goes until 40s, I don't know. There's a gap of people that are just not coming out to literary events, to places like Cyclorama. They don't think about it on a, you know, hey, this Saturday, let's go to Cyclorama. So how do we get re-engaged? How do we get those people interested in coming to some of these programs?
I think you have to pick their interests. If you pick their interests, their one question like, why is this? Or why things are the way they are? If they have that desire to learn why things are the way that they are, then and you kind of have to give them a nudge by, have you ever thought about this? And presenting these programs may, one of these programs may pique someone's interest. Like,
yeah,
I thought about that. Let me go to see if I can learn more.
Right. I think, and, you know, as a guy that does programming, you know, I think sometimes our default is what's closest, what's cheapest, you know, and frankly, I hate to admit it, but like what's marketed the heaviest in our faces, right? So we go to the blockbuster summer movie because we've seen 25 commercials for it. There's a theater 10 minutes from our house. And yeah, it's getting more expensive, but it's still relatively inexpensive as entertainment goes, right? And something like Cyclorama is both educational and entertainment, right? I mean, it's, you're spending your free time doing it.
That is true. Yeah. And I have to say, I've been really fortunate the last couple of years working with Monica and her team, because we really have been able to not only bring what might be the cheapest and the closest, we have folks coming in to Cyclorama literally from across the country.
Wow.
I mean, tomorrow evening we have a program. Ronald Coddington is an author and works at the Chronicle of Higher Education in Washington, D.C., and he wrote a book, African American Faces of the Civil War, and he'll be at Cyclorama tomorrow evening. Talking about the African Americans that obviously we don't always think of as having participated actively and in many ways in the Civil War. He actually wrote a book about this subject matter and is going to be at Cyclorama tomorrow, and we're actually going to have a reception. So not only do people get a chance to kind of come and hear someone who's not from Atlanta and is presenting information that is not normally associate what you think about when you think of the Civil War.
Sure.
But people will have an opportunity to come and have something to eat, talk to Ron, kind of mix and mingle, and have a really enjoyable evening. So I think you have to, I think what Monica said is true. You have to pique people's interest, and you have to kind of connect with people where they are. And so, you know, there are a lot of young folks in the Atlanta area who love to kind of network and, you know, kind of do that whole social thing in the evening on a, you know, Thursday evening or Friday evening. And so Cyclorama, in addition to doing kind of some standard lectures, does things like this where we give folks an opportunity to kind of mix and mingle before a more educational kind of experience.
Because it's educational and entertaining.
And right, and social.
Karen knows. You put a little reception in front of anything.
Absolutely.
And people will love it. You know, one of my other hot buttons before I let you guys go, because I know you have a tight schedule this morning, is people finding their passions and doing what they love to do work-wise. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I know when I was a kid, it was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Doctor, nurse, teacher, fireman, policeman, garbage man. Like, there were, you know, nurse. There weren't that many choices in our minds, right? Mm-hmm. But doing this job, I meet so many people that do so many interesting things that I want to talk to you guys a little bit about working in museums. Also, I have a little side interest because my daughter, who is in college, is actually going to go get her master's in museum studies, and she's really into museums. So I just sort of, I would never have thought of that as a kid. And I'm super impressed that my daughter, who is way more mature and responsible than I am, found something like that, you know, this young in her life, that's sort of an oddball thing. I you know, it's not nurse, doctor, you know, computer programmer, whatever. It's right. A much more kind of out there field, and she's already sort of zoned in on that as something she likes. So how did you guys end up working in this field?
I am an educator. My background is education. So this was, I think, the perfect fit for me.
Yeah. And Anthony?
And actually, my background is in education as well. I started out as a high school English and creative writing teacher. But I have, in the early 90s, I was living in Washington, and a friend of mine, a cousin, actually recommended that I speak to someone she knew because I was looking for work. And as it turned out, this one person I called, She worked at one of the Smithsonian museums.
You were in the right city.
Needed someone who spoke Spanish. I spoke Spanish, and she needed someone to work in this in the Latin community because of this exhibit they were going to do research for. And by doing that little 9-month long consulting project,
you got in.
I kind of got bit by the bug. And then I asked another friend of mine who worked for the Smithsonian, hey, if I like this work, where would I go to get a graduate degree to kind of better focus myself? And he recommended George Washington, and as they say, the rest is history.
Interesting. And she's actually looking at the program at GWU.
Well, they have two. They have the museum studies, which is what I was first interested in, but when I called, I actually got the museum education department.
Interesting.
And so...
So then you just got...
Then I was
they
like,
got
oh,
you.
Wow. Right, right. They got me, exactly.
It's so interesting. I might have to put her in touch with you, but... Sure. It is really interesting to me that, you know, to find these kind of interesting, because a lot of times it takes people, as it did with you, some twists and turns in the road to get
Absolutely.
To that place. I mean, I know anyone who listens to the show knows I'm on my, like, I don't know, 17th career or something. And I finally found the one that works for me. But, you know, it took a lot of, I certainly didn't know what that was when I was, 10, 12, 15 years old. So it's kind of interesting, and I appreciate you guys sharing that. If people want to come out to Cyclorama, if they want to just know more, what's the website? How do they find you guys?
The website is atlantacyclorama.org.
Atlantacyclorama.org. Okay.
And so if people want to come for a tour, we're open Tuesday through Saturday from 9:30 to 4:30. Most of our programming is evening programming, typically start at 6 or 6:30.
And that stuff is all on the website?
It is on the website, atlantacyclorama.org.
And, I mean, just to give me an idea, like with an evening program, what does that cost?
Some of them are free. There are some that are, we do charge admission to the event tomorrow evening. There will be an admission fee for adults. It's $10, seniors, $8.
It's cheaper than a movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay, so atlantacyclorama.org and
yes.
educational programs, all that is on there. Okay,
yes.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so
Thank
much for joining
us. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Dana.
We really appreciate it. And I hope lots of people come out to Cyclorama. And maybe we'll get you guys to give us some free tickets to give away next time you're around. All right. Moving on to Daryl. I'm going to let these guys quietly sneak out of the studio while we shift our thinking from giant paintings to all kinds of technology. So how are you this morning, Daryl?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
You've been very patiently waiting over there for your turn to talk.
No, not at all. The Cyclorama is fascinating. You know, I was going to say that my kids, they really enjoy it because they like the big maps and they like the lights and they like to follow everything that happens. And so for them, it's kind of a different experience. I'm a little bit of a history buff, so I like reading and understanding everything that happened at the time. And my kids can also enjoy kind of the visual aspects of the display and the location, which is really cool.
Right. I think it is interesting because if we take our kids to things like that, they love it.
Oh, yeah.
It's just us. We, as the grown-ups, have to get motivated to, like, you know, drive that extra 10 minutes or figure out where something is, which is so much easier now with the technology we have, with the GPSs and whatever. You just go, Cyclorama, and then they're there.
It is.
You know, it used to be we had to have our maps out and stop and ask for directions, which we know how men are about that.
Hey, no, I resemble that remark.
Yeah. So, speaking of technology, it's a horrible segue, but we're going to just go with it.
Go right ahead.
Let's talk about Emerald Data Networks and what you guys are doing. But before we get too into what you do, let's just talk about sort of your philosophy of employment, because you guys were at the Best and Brightest, which for people who don't know is the 101 Best and Brightest Places to Work in Atlanta. And what that means is you're providing a good work environment.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for the softball, by the way.
No problem. You know, this is not Barbara Walters. So, but I want to talk about that because I think that is a key to a successful, in my mind, another sort of personal hot button is that, you know, the key to a successful business is, you know, having the right people working for you. And the way you do that is by providing, a great place to work.
Yeah, and providing things that people want. I mean, I think a lot of the times we get too hung up on the number. A lot of people, especially when I talk to them in the interviewing process, are hung up on, what's my salary going to be? What's the salary range? That's almost always the first question you hear from anybody looking for a job. And I think that people don't really lead their lives according to their salary number. And so because they don't, it's kind of upside down, because the thing that they're most interested in is how much flexibility they'll have on the job, how much education can they get, what kind of room for advancement do they have, you know, how much time can they be away from the office, can they have some kind of flexible space to work in or flexible hours to work. especially those of us with families. And so a lot of times, like, the salary is like the first thing you have to get over. And then after that, you really start to talk about, well, what are you looking for in a position? How do you want to work? Just like you said, you didn't figure out what you really wanted to do for a while. It took you trying several things. Jobs are, and in particular, the things that come with jobs other than the compensation. It's the same way. You got to kind of go, well, okay, now I worked a job that had flexible hours, and that was kind of cool. I think I like that. I think I'll do that again.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, you talked about people sort of getting stuck at that number. And I swear I could do 10 shows on this because
sure.
One of the things that's really interesting about all this reading I've been doing, too, is that it's sort of like all the experts who have researched this and studied it at all kind of agree. But the rest of the corporate world who doesn't have time to read all these books hasn't really figured it out yet.
Yes.
That it's a baseline. And I think from the employer standpoint, you have to realize that you have to provide a reasonable pay for a job. And it's not a motivator. It's not an incentive. It's reasonable pay for the job that you're asking someone to do. And the reason is because once they don't have to think about it anymore, as you said, and they can start to think about other things that are motivating them,
right,
then it just becomes a non-issue. If you gyp them, even by $5,000 a year,
sure,
they are going to end up with a chip on their shoulder,
right,
and they're always going to be thinking about that salary. So I almost think, and from an employee standpoint, as you mentioned, them coming in sort of saying, what's the salary?
Right.
I almost think it's a defensive posture anymore because we're so used to being jerked around that we just assume we're going to be jerked around, you know?
Well, that's unfortunate. It's great to be recognized as one of the 101 best in Atlanta. And you're absolutely right. What happens is with salary, people look at it as an entitlement because as soon as the discussion is over, then you immediately feel I'm entitled to that amount, right? If I said, great, you're going to come on board, you're going to make $100,000, there is no motivation in that anymore because that's what you're entitled to just for showing up in the morning.
Right.
So it's all the other things that keep people on the job, the opportunity to grow, the opportunity to get more education, the opportunity to try new things. You know, one of the things I'm fond of telling the guys is you also have leeway to make mistakes here. Every one of us makes mistakes. We're going to back you. We know these things are going to happen. We're going to make sure that, you know, we take care of you. So.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it is, you're right. It is not a motivator. And the thing is, it's never a motivator.
No,
that's what's so
is.
Interesting. Even if you said 100,000, right, as an example.
Sure.
If you said 200, it's still not a motivator.
No, it's not.
It's only a motivator for that first week.
No.
And you're excited about it. And then it's not a motivator. Then it's just my salary.
Hey, I would argue it's really only a motivator when you're looking through the ads and you go, oh, 100. I'll
apply for
I'll
that.
Send that one in.
Right.
75. I'll send that one
I
in.
I think you're exactly right.
Yeah. After that, it's not.
Yeah. It's only a demotivator if it's not enough. That's the thing.
Absolutely. But breaking your promises in any way is going to be a demotivator.
Well,
so it's not always the salary, but that's the thing that most people look at.
Well, and people do, you know, if people are accustomed to, when I was saying, you know, with the headlines that jobs are up and pay is down.
Yes.
You know, it's like if I was working at 100,000 as your example, and then I lost my job and I had to take a new one and I only can get 80 now for the same job, I'm not going to be as motivated and I'm going to be looking for the $100,000 job and where is that? And so, you know, it is a demotivator if you're not getting what you feel you're worth, or what you think your equals are getting other
yes.
In the marketplace or at the same company, but it's never going to be a motivator. It's a very interesting topic. And it gets back to sort of the experts sort of know this and agree on it, but a lot of corporate America hasn't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah, and it's one thing you have to do is as you interview people, as you run a company, you have to kind of figure out what is motivating people because it's not money.
Right.
What is it that they want in their lives? What is it that they're after?
Right.
And you don't have to get that at the office. So that's a big misconception. A lot of people think I have to have my internal, what I have to need to have in order for me to feel happy, I have to have that at my job. You
right.
don't have to. But if you can get it at your job,
It's
even better, and you never feel like you're working.
Well, the thing is, if you can get, and this is where we're going to segue into what you guys actually do, but
sure.
I think, you know, if you can get the people at your company that are passionate about what you are doing, what your mission as a company is, you know, I used to be in technology
yeah.
on one of my 17 careers.
Oh, awesome.
And
what'd
yeah,
you do? You got to tell me now.
Well, I did a lot of different things. I was in technology for quite some time, actually.
Okay.
I was I started out sort of as a technical trainer, installations kind of person, and then I got more technical and I was a programmer and then I kind of climbed the corporate ladder a bit and I was sort of a VP of technology and then I started my own web development business, whatever. So I did a lot of different
nice.
Things in that field, did a little customer service, whatever. But I was never one of those people that was truly passionate about technology.
Right.
I did it because I had an aptitude for it. I was
sure.
capable. And the pay was good, and I had a small child, and I had to support her, and so
right.
that's what I was going to do. But I worked with people who were passionate about it. I worked with some people who read the magazines when they got home at night. That's what they tinkered when they got home at night.
Absolutely.
They were technology junkies.
Absolutely.
And so they were in their zone when they were at work. They were, they couldn't have been happier.
Yeah.
And so you can, I think there are, if you can find those people, I think there are those people that can get that at work.
And you can find those people. So one of the things that we do as part of our pre-employment process is we do what's called a DISC assessment. And it kind of tells us the way people prefer to interact with the world, what their preferences for things, what things they like above other things. And one of the pieces of that is called theoretical. And the theoretical tells you that they're after knowledge for knowledge's sake. And so that's the person that's going to come in. Like, I had one guy come in an interview and he brought me the diagram of his home network. I was like, he's in.
Done.
This is who we're looking for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so the second thing that we look for in that is the utilitarian, and that is they understand the value of things. So usually the primary is theoretical. They want to know things just because they want to know. They have an innate drive, but then the utilitarian is, how will a business use that? How will that be valuable to you or to me or to the process?
Right. I think for me it was interesting because, now I was in technology. I've probably been out of it now for 10 years. But when I was in it, I think if I were to analyze myself, what I liked was the puzzle solving part of it.
Me too.
And I liked kind of trying to come up with the most graceful solution.
Yes.
So not just any solution, but the most graceful one. And I remember at one point when I had already moved into management, I had a bunch of coders working for me. And of course, they thought I didn't know anything because I was a manager.
Right.
And so one of my guys brought me some SQL code that was so inelegant. It worked,
right?
But it was so inelegant. It was like 4 pages long. And I was like, hold on a second. Tap, 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 click, click, click. And I like rewrote his code down to a half a page from 4 pages. And it did the exact same thing, but it was way more elegant. That's what I loved.
Yeah.
But I didn't have employers that were savvy enough at the time to say, oh, wow, she's got a gift in this one area. She may not be somebody who wants to sit and code all the time,
right?
But we should take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another sort of interesting facet, I think, that younger employers are starting to get more to find out what people's strengths are, doing things like you're doing, giving people those kinds of assessments and saying, oh, okay, we can really use a guy like that because they have this special gift, you know?
And what you're talking about, these things have actually been known for hundreds of years. It's just a matter of getting the business to know them. And what you're talking about primarily in the skill set that you're mentioning is the improver skill. So one of the things that, I'm sorry, I can't remember the gentleman's name now, but if you Google it, you'll find it very easily. There are only 4 jobs in the world, right? One of them is improver. And so what you're talking about is taking something because you maybe don't enjoy the mundane pieces of writing the code initially, but looking at it and making it efficient, because I myself am an efficiency addict. And so when I look at something that's inefficient, it like bothers me physically. I can't stand to be around inefficiency.
Yeah, I reload the dishwasher. if it's not been loaded in the most efficient way, I reload it.
I'm right there with you.
So let's talk specifically about what you guys do for your customers.
Sure. So we help our customers answer two important questions. First, what technology should we use? Second, how should we use it for our business model? Because technology is not an all-encompassing one-size-fits-all, but that's the way our industry sells it, right? When you buy something, and I don't want to pick on anybody in particular, but if you buy a piece of software from Apple or from Microsoft, it's set up a particular way, and that's the default, and it's always working that way. The way that it's defaulted may not be the best way for your organization to use it. If you're an organization that is in financial planning, then you have different requirements than an organization that maybe makes hangers for a living, for example. So we help the customers understand what it is they have. And we understand from them how they want to run their business and what goals they're looking to achieve from a business perspective. And then we help them meld what's available to them in the technology arena, starting with what do you already have, what can your people already do, and where do you want to go with your business?
So what kinds of companies do you traditionally kind of do these services for? Does it vary industries or?
It is completely horizontal. Our top six are all over the place. We have a manufacturing firm. They make mold and mildew abatement equipment. It's called Abatement Technologies. The state of Georgia is one of our largest clients, Georgia Public Library Service in specific. So all the state libraries run off of systems that we support and maintain year-round. We also do the state of Indiana, do the entire state there for the same systems. Buckhead Life Restaurant Group is one of our top customers, so hospitality is big for us as well. We have several restaurants and different locations and do that. We have Telworks International. They're a firm that actually does scrapping of old cell phone towers. They take them down, break them up, and then they resell the parts.
Interesting.
So they have, you know, major
so that's another
agreements with like Verizon and AT&T and that sort of thing.
When I talk about like jobs and careers you never thought of, I'm sure that taking down cell towers.
You know, it's interesting. You were talking about that earlier, and I thought back to my days of taking the SAT, the pre-SAT, the ASFAB, and like afterwards they're like, well, you know, you're good in science and math, and so there's like these four or five things you should do. And I think we're doing our children a disservice by not giving them a lot more options.
Right, because there are so many jobs.
There
taking
are.
Down cell towers, apparently, is one of them.
Yeah. I'm beginning to like being on the radio. Maybe I'll
Do
this for a living.
I think you have a gift. I think you have a gift. My co-host chair is empty, so come on. You know, it's interesting because technology touches every kind of company now.
So absolutely.
You saying that your business is horizontal is not a huge surprise in that way, because, and I think we all have questions about, as I said before, you know, I sort of just made the switch over to Apple.
Yeah, good for you.
And, you know, I was always a Microsoft person, and those things are still incredibly valuable. I also don't discount one over the other. I just happen to find that I'm doing a lot of, video editing and audio editing, and Apple sort of is good for that. So, but that doesn't mean, depending on what else I decide to do in my many careers, that I won't end up having a Microsoft machine for something else. But on a bigger scale, on a B2B scale where you are, the questions are so much more important, because there's the systems cost more, the training cost more, the upkeep cost more.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, people that are just winging it, I guess, and grabbing something, maybe wasting a lot of money. Is that what you're finding with people?
Well, what I find in general is that people just reach out for the populist answer. So, you know, if somebody's setting up a new office, you know, for example, then they'll look at other offices that are in the same industry. Like if I'm going to set up a new insurance office, I'm an Allstate agent, then I'll take a look at the other offices and go, well, you know, they're using Windows Server, so I'll use Windows Server. They're using Windows Desktop, so I'll do that. But they're using iPhone, so I'm going to get an iPhone. And that's generally what they do. And there's nothing wrong with doing things that are established that work for your industry. Really, the opportunity cost is doing what you could be doing, right? And so a lot of times we come in and we work with organizations, and the thing that gets overlooked the most is not the $50,000 to implement a new system, for example, but the how are my people going to use it? Are they going to adopt the processes and the procedures that will be important for me to get the proficiency out of it and to get what the business needs? So that's why we always drive everything that we do by the business goals. We're not really salespeople. We're really enabling the business to meet their goals. So that's why when we meet with an organization, we say, you know, tell me what you want to do. If an organization comes to us and says, we want to have multiple offices in the Southeast, in the next 2 years, we want to have 6 offices. That's a plan. If they come to us and say, you know, what's been happening in our organization is revenues have been down. We're going to have to make some cutbacks. We're going to have to reduce our staff by 50%. And we're looking to how can we recoup some CapEx? How can we get out of some contracts or modify some contracts in order to save some operational costs month over month? That's a totally different plan.
Right.
And so people too often, I think, don't look at their technology and go, how can we get more out of this, whether our business is up or down? And that's something we help them do.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. And we've had a down market for a while. And, you know, I guess people are saying it's coming back up. It sort of seems to be crawling back up, maybe. but you're right. I mean, and no matter what the economy is doing, there are always businesses in flux because industries
absolutely.
Shift and change and all of that. One of the things I was reading about the other day is, you know, they talk about outsourcing.
Yes.
And there's also home sourcing.
Yes.
Which I think is really interesting. Have you dealt with any companies who need technology to kind of set up more home sourcing?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that we get requested most often is, can you make my computers and my phones and my web and my interfaces and my payments and everything available so that I can sit at the lake, for example? Several CEOs come to us and say, I want to be at the lake house for a month in July with my kids. Can I do everything that I want to do from there? Well, absolutely. Really, the answer with technology is never no.
Yeah.
Some people don't get this. The answer is never no. The answer is, how much are you willing to pay to get that?
It's so funny. Having been in technology, I used to say that to people all the time. I would have clients and they would say, well, you know, I want to do this. And I would say, well, you can do that.
Absolutely.
But it's going to cost you X amount of money.
Yes.
And, you know, you're right. There's absolutely, we can do anything you want. Anything.
We can do anything.
Anything. It's just how much money do you want to spend?
How much do you want to spend on it?
And maybe I'm not the right person, but I can find you the right person, you know, kind of thing. Because, like, I couldn't probably build you, you know, a wall of monitors that all sync up and shows 10 different movies at the same time and while you're working or whatever.
Yeah.
But somebody could.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
What you wanted.
And also, how much risk are you willing to accept? So a lot of times that's part of the technology equation.
Yes.
Especially as people go more and more cloud. Cloud is great. It has some great applications, but it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
A lot of organizations have federal regulations that they have to abide by, and going to the cloud adds more risk to the stuff that they're doing. So, you know, there is the risk factor, there's the cost factor, but the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
It's just, are you going to like everything else on the other side of the yes?
Sometimes it's yes, but.
Yeah, yes, but.
Yeah. And with having so many different kinds of customers, what kind of marketing strategy do you have? I mean, how do you find these people, or how do they find you?
That's a great question. You know, we have our website. We've just done some recent videos. We're Better Business Award winners now, six of the last 7 years. I actually didn't give the awards last year, which I was a little bummed about myself. But we were in Forbes in March, and so we worked with a great company to do a profile that was put in Forbes magazine. So that was really nice. We're going to be doing another one next year. A lot of ours is referral, though, to be honest, because what we do is very unusual in the marketplace. There's a lot of traditional IT type firms, and I'll use my air quotes here that
right.
you can't see, right?
That's right.
But IT firms usually focus on two or three things. And if you go to the website, it'll say, you know, we're going to do Microsoft and Cisco and WatchGuard, for example, just to pick three technologies.
Sure.
But what we're doing is we're helping companies understand what they already have, understanding where they're going with their business, and then everything that we do ties into their business needs. So business come with us and they say things like, I want to be able to have my sales staff my sales staff submit their reports online every Friday afternoon by 3 o'clock. How can I get that done?
Sure.
Right? And so it's not about let's sell you a $12,000-$15,000 server in the background. It's the business owner says, if you get me that, that's what I want.
But so now, do you have sales guys that work for you?
No, we don't have any full-time sales staff. We're all engineers.
Okay. Interesting. So you guys don't sit there and go like, which networking event are we going to go to? Because if we go to manufacturing, we might miss a client over there and whatever. You just are kind of doing some marketing, it sounds like, with getting your profiles out there and whatever, but not necessarily aggressively selling.
Yeah, it's not really selling, because it's a complete collaborative situation with us and our clients. So we do things like referral marketing. PowerCore is something I'm very active in. I've been in it going on my 10th year.
Okay.
So that's something that's been great for me, because I'm an engineer by trade, so I don't get the whole sales and marketing thing naturally. That's something I've had to learn.
Yeah. You and me both.
But it's been interesting, and I enjoy it. The different words that you use to pique people's interest and to get them to understand how you might be different. And for us, it's all about doing the business piece, and technology is just an enabler.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the way – I mean, it used to be that technology was – the thing,
right?
And now it's not the thing.
No,
you know, now it's like you're like you said, it's the support. We again, I'm not dating either one of us, because we're both very young.
Of course not.
And fabulous, but
no Claire all here.
That's right. Well, but you know, you know when we were kind of coming up in the business world, you know, you didn't think anything about your telephone. It was just your telephone on your
right.
desk, and
of
that
course.
Was just equipment that you had, and of course,
right.
I mean, we grew up using a phone, and now that's the case with computers, with applications, with, I mean, who would, can you, do kids today even know what a typewriter is?
No, they don't know what a typewriter is. They know what a pad is. And so my kids already have way more devices than I'm going to admit on the radio.
Okay, fair.
But
fair enough.
They enjoy every one of them. I mean, you know, they have iTouches, which is an Apple device. They have their own computers, which is an IBM device,
right.
an IBM Microsoft type device. You know, it used to be in our industry that people would label themselves as, oh, I'm a Mac guy, or I'm an Apple guy, or I'm an IBM guy. And that's really starting to go away, thankfully, because
yeah.
the technology really should be used for its best purposes, and different technologies are better used for different things. As you were saying before, you know, you just made the transition to Apple. My wife did as well. She got an iPhone just like a year and a half ago, and she loves it. Now she's got an iPad, and that's really going great for her. But, you know, for pictures, for video, for audio editing, those types of things, the applications that you can get on a Mac are outstanding.
Yeah.
But there are other things that are much better done on a Linux platform or on a
sure.
Windows platform.
Sure, absolutely. And definitely, you know, one of the reasons I am such sort of a late comer to Apple products is because I was so heavily involved in technology and in coding and in,
right.
You know, business software and business applications, that I was in a Microsoft world.
Yeah, and I wrote an article recently. It's on Answers for Business Owners website, the old adage, no one's fired for buying IBM, where I talk specifically about the opportunity cost for just doing what everybody else in your industry does and not doing what is most appropriate for your business and the way you want to run the business.
Sure. before we run out of time, when we may just do it again at the end for giggles, let's sure. give people your website so we don't forget. So if anyone is like, oh God, I need help picking out what systems we need, they know who to call.
Absolutely. It's emeralddata.net. It's emerald like the stone, E-M-E-R-A-L-D, and then second word data. So there's two D's in the middle, .net.
Emeralddata.net. Yeah. Okay, great.
And when you go to the site, our video actually plays that does three customer showcases, three different industries. So you can see and hear from the customers what we were able to do for them over really a long period of time.
So how many people do you have in your organization?
We have 10 full-time right now.
Okay. And do people home source? Do they work at the client sites? Do they work in your office? How does that work?
Absolutely. I mean, all of our engineers have the voice over IP phones at their house. So when you call our office, usually the only person at our office at any given time is the office manager, Nicole. All the engineers are either out on the road or they're at their homes. They're working remotely. Most of the work that we do is you get up the scale of doing individual things. Most of the higher end work is going to be done remotely.
So you guys are going out and sort of helping a company, a manufacturing company, to use that example.
Yes.
Figure out what systems they need across everything they're doing, the manufacturing systems, the supply chain systems, the office systems, all of that. And then are you doing customizations of them? Are you coding? Like what else are you doing?
We get into some of that, but we're very strict to stay in the things that we're good at. So if an organization comes to us and says, hey, you know, could you help us implement this new SAP system? I would say, well, not from an implementation execution piece. No. Can we help you plan that? Yes. Is it right for you? We can help you make that decision, but we would not be doing the actual execution. So just to give you, it's a great question. Give you an example. We just put a new restaurant in Boca Raton for the Buckhead Life Restaurant Group here in Atlanta. It'll be opening the end of July. And so, you know, we did their phones, we did their PCs, we did their printers, we did their faxes, we did their video systems, we did their management systems of the kitchen. So they have systems that tell them when their oil tanks are getting low. They have systems that tell them when the cooler's too hot.
Amazing.
We did all of those pieces. We did their security system. So all of the technology that went into that restaurant, we planned out, we helped them make decisions about, we did the execution on a lot of it. Some of the things we did farm out, like the security pieces, you have to have proper permits and so on and so forth. But we did the planning for all those pieces, and we've done all of their restaurants for the past 13 years as they've rolled them out.
Interesting. So now that makes me sort of takes me to another topic
sure.
briefly, which is, you know, sort of relationships that you have with other types of technology companies, because
yes.
everybody must want to get in bed with you. Just saying.
Absolutely. And our relationships are really good there because we work with the individuals on what they're good at. And we make sure that we talk to them about the information that we're getting back and forth from the customers. So lots of the top, let's say 30 other IT, traditional IT type firms, bring work to us. And they bring it to us because they know that we're going to help them help their customer specifically with what they need. And we're not after what they're doing. So a managed services firm, for example, I'm sure you know what a managed services firm is. They want a per device listing, and they're going to give you a support contract based on all the devices that you have. So they're really after that routine maintenance operational piece that comes on a monthly basis. If an organization has decided that they want to get a new phone system, and that's not something the managed services team does, they can bring that to us. We'll help them. We'll implement it. We'll put it in. We'll make sure that all the operational pieces that the other company is working on stays with the other company. In fact, that other company has access to all of our information on that customer because we code in our system that customer is theirs.
Now, I have another silly question because as you're talking, I started thinking about working with an interior designer
yeah.
as a comparative.
Yeah.
And there's two kinds. You know, there's the ones that upcharge what they're recommending.
Sure.
So they've recommended $7 billion rug, and then they take 10% of that rug.
Right.
Or there's the ones that work on an hourly rate, and
right.
they just get paid for their time to design the room, and they
right.
don't care if you buy a $700 rug or a $7 billion rug, because
right.
they're just going to put the best rug in the room for you.
Doesn't matter.
Are you guys charging, I mean, are you an hourly rate kind of people, or are you a markup kind of people? Like, how do you do what you do?
We do it in several different veins. Probably the most frequent type is somebody comes to us with a project, like I said, the phone system. So we did a phone system, was a $110,000 phone system for a large manufacturing firm out in Suwannee a couple years ago. And so we did that as a project. They came, we quoted it out, we worked with them, we helped them through the steps of how do you want it to work, how do you want it configured, how much is it going to cost, and then they get a project price for that. We also have customers that we do ongoing things for. So Buckhead Life is a great example. We do ongoing work for them. They have an IT director on site who kind of does triage, does everything that he can. And then once it gets to a point where he needs to pass it off, he passes it off to us, and we work for them on an hourly basis on a retainer type situation.
So, but like if you're looking at helping a restaurant decide between two point of sale systems kind of mm-hmm. thing, you're not getting a percentage of whichever one they choose.
No. So, I strongly believe that you should not be doing that. And that's one of my complaints about my industry is if you look at an organization and they're selling only Microsoft, Cisco, WatchGuard Technologies, and maybe Dell servers, you know, they're getting a percentage of the sales for everything that they're pushing because right. they are pushing it, right?
So you can see that I'm pushing you down this this direction sure. Of the conversation for a reason, because I think that's a huge differentiator for you.
It is.
You know, for me as a customer, I want you to be my Clark Howard to some extent, right? Like,
yeah.
I want you to be able to tell me what is the right thing for me, not what is the best thing for you for me.
Right. And that's one of the things that we talk about is whenever you come to us, we tell prospective new clients, look, working with us is like working with an accountant or a financial advisor. I can't give you advice until I know what you have and where you're going.
Right.
And so a lot of companies will say, well, let me go ahead and give you a quote for that because they already know what they're selling.
Right.
But I'm not selling anything.
Right.
So, and honestly, it's a little bit of an inhibitor because companies are like, wait, what do I have to do? I'm like, well, you have to give us your contracts. You have to let us look at what you're doing. We have to look at your network. We have to run some tests. We have to talk to your people. You got to tell me what you want to do with your business because the same business, for example, Abatement Technologies, if they said, we want to grow 50% this year and we want to put 30 people at home doing sales, that's different from things aren't so good. We're going to have to cut back our staff 20%. Completely different plan.
Yeah. Really interesting. I think there's so many interesting models kind of out there right now. And I feel like what you guys are offering is something people can feel comfortable with. I mean, it's an investment, right? But you always,
it is.
You know, you sort of get what you pay for. If you,
absolutely.
You could easily make, especially if you're talking about investing thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars in systems, you know, it's kind of good to have a guide. And using that interior designer theory is sort of kind of the same thing. You know, you look at a big project in your house and you think, well, I could wing this on my own, but I'm not a designer. I'm not an expert.
Right.
Or I could get somebody that I trust that's going to give me good advice to come in and do some of it or all of it or a part of it or whatever. So,
yeah. And we've talked about the big companies, but we help the small as well. I mean, we have hundreds of customers that are probably 10 and less, and we help them one time usually, or we help them once a year, like set up a plan for what they're going to do. And then they execute in the plan over a year, over several years' time.
Interesting.
So what we do is not limited to just really large organizations. We have individual proprietors that are customers. We've been working with Christophe's to Go, which is a small French food supplier. They make the food locally, and then they ship it all around town. And they wanted a model to roll out new Christophe's all around the city. And so we worked with them. We set down a model, and now they're doing it. Did a very similar thing with Piece of Cake.
So. Oh, cool. You like the food stuff. I can see that.
I do like the food stuff. I'm a foodie.
The hospitality stuff. All right. So any restaurants looking for some help, give Daryl a call. And anybody else, obviously, because he'll help you no matter what industry you're in.
Yes, we will.
Once again, the website is?
EmeraldData.net. Two D's in the middle.
EmeraldData.net. Okay. Daryl Rogers, thank you so much for joining me. What a great show this morning.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
We were kind of all over the map. We had Cyclorama and technology. You know, you never know what you're going to get on Good Morning Atlanta.
That's what people love about the show.
That's right. And I do want to let everybody know about an exciting new venture that we've got coming up starting Sunday, July 21st at 11 a.m. I will be doing a live show on Biz 1190 WAFS here in Atlanta, which will be sort of a week in review, kind of making sure you catch up on everything you missed while you were heads down doing your job. We'll keep you up to date on things like the Ferris wheel, and we'll also be sharing some clips from some of the Business Radio X interviews throughout all of the Business Radio X stations around town. So that'll be really fun and exciting. It'll be fun for me, and I'll actually be able to take call-ins, which will be cool. So get ready to dial on Sunday, July 21st. Again, it's Biz 1190 at 11 a.m. on Sundays. So I hope to hear from you all and see you all then. And in the meantime, this has been Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta. You can find out more about them at their website, wtcatlanta.com. And Central Atlanta Progress, we're a proud partner of theirs also. And that's atlantadowntown.com. And thanks for joining me. We will see you next week.